Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. The show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/maxinethompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. I'm the author of novel The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, and my latest novel is L.A. Blues with an upcoming sequel, L.A. Blues 2, Slipping into Darkness. I also have ebooks available on Amazon, and many of them are part of anthologies, All in the Family, Proverbs for the People, Never Knew Love Like This Before, and Secret Lovers. Tonight's guest is a publisher, a best-selling author, and a business owner. Her name is Jessica Tillis. Her latest book is Loving Simone. Good evening. How are you doing tonight, Jessica?
I'm fine, Maxine. How are you? It's so good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it was great seeing you at Black Writers on Tour and reconnecting, and it's ironic that I didn't realize it was 2004 when you last came on the show.
Uh-huh, sure was, 2004. Time flies.
Yes, and we've talked through the years, and we've connected through writers that you published that I had worked with before as editors, and so, you know, it's not like we ever lost touch, but I had never met you, and it's the irony that with the Internet, you think you know people.
You really, you think you know them, and then when you meet them, because when I saw you weekend before last at the Black Writers Conference, I said, I'm going to sneak up behind her and hug her and give her a big kiss on the cheek, and you probably look at me saying, who is this?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even remember seeing a picture of you online. I just
really?
Knew your name, and and the irony is that you're working with my mentor, so that just has worked out great.
Yes, yes, indeedy.
Well, tell us about Jessica Tillis for those who aren't familiar with you.
Well, Jessica Tillis is a best-selling author, award-winning publisher, and entrepreneur. I am the author of 9 books, Anything Goes, In My Sister's Corner, Apple Tree, Sweet Revenge, Fatal Desire, Unfinished Business, Crossing Sisters, Erogenous Zone, A Sexual Voyage, and Loving Simone. I'm also the CEO and creative director at TWASolutions.com, where we design book covers, interior of books. We do all types of graphic design, web design, ghostwriting, editing, whatever you need, any type of customized services, we do. And I'm also the award-winning publisher of Express Yourself Publishing, and you can find us online at expressyourselfpublishing.com. That's ExpressYourselfPublishing.com. And I have some phenomenal authors. We have some great titles, and Express Yourself Publishing has been in existence since 2000. So we're really doing some really good things at Express Yourself Publishing, and we're about to take things to the next level. So 2012 has just been a good year for us so far.
Are you doing ebooks now too, Jessica?
Yes. Yes, all of our books are in ebook.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. I was looking at your website and the books that you published. Are you one of the graphic designers for your covers, or do you use someone else for the covers?
I'm the only one. Every book I've ever published, including my own, I've designed the cover.
Oh my goodness.
I've designed through TWASolutions.com. I've designed well over 500 book covers about that many books. So So I've just had, I absolutely love it, Maxine. And I didn't realize that it would be such a passion of mine until I got really deep into it. And I absolutely love that creative side of myself.
It's wonderful that your book, I'm looking at your book, Loving Simone, that you got it picked up by Black Expressions, and here you're an independent publisher, and that used to be much harder to do, but that's wonderful how you've gotten yours picked up. Tell us about that journey.
Well, I met Carol Mackey. I'd known of Carol Mackey, the editor-in-chief of Black Expressions Book Club, but I met her in 2008. At the African American Literary Awards Show in New York, when my publishing company was nominated for Independent Publishing Company of the Year. And I won,
Congratulations.
Thank you. And Carol approached me and she said, send me your catalog. And I said, oh, yes, I will. But during that time, I was taking care of my dad. I think the last time you and I spoke in 2004, I was the full-time caretaker of my mom and my dad. Well, in 2007, my mom passed on, and so I had my dad who had dementia. So it was just really, really, really a tough time for me running two businesses and three, I'm the third business, and then taking care of my dad, too. So I never got around to sending my catalog until my dad passed. In 2011.
Wow, the last time we talked, I was caregiving for my husband and you were caregiving for your father. And I remember it was like a babble fest. I don't know if you heard me, if I heard you. We were just stressed. Our cup was running over. So.
Oh, yes, Lord. Job in itself.
Right, but you stayed in the business, and that's what I admire. You didn't give up, and so I'm glad that you're back. You just got to be out more visible. So you've been working all along. It's just you haven't been as visible.
Oh, now I'm getting out there. You know, I've been to California, and I was supposed to have been in Hampton, Virginia this past weekend, but the stinky flu got me, so I'm just getting over that. But I'm definitely getting out and going to give myself more exposure because it's time to put the spotlight on me now.
Yes, and it's, I'm thinking that so many people with the Internet now, we've got so many ways to get our books out there. Now we've even got that Pinterest and we've got different groups that you can be on Facebook. I added up about 25,000 with the different groups that I'm in on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of begging people to sign your little sign, you can have so many people on your little mailing list. But a lot of people don't sign it. But you'd be surprised. I heard from a writer yesterday who said my article that I wrote 4 years ago called How Death and Dying Can Inform Your Writing. And I wrote that right after my sister's death when I, sat through hospice with her and went through it again. So I'm going to relook at that article, and it's given me an idea for this ebook. Ebook I've already written that I haven't put out because it was like by dates, and I'm thinking, no, I can just change it to essays. It doesn't have to be by dates that you read. You can pick up any essay and read it. But the fact that people, are still reading things that you put on the Internet, it's really amazing. And now I was reading that they're having a lot of problem with plagiarism on Amazon because of the self-publishing, but it's just a matter of running a few words that can find out if you plagiarize something.
Right, right. One thing about the Internet, and I tell everyone I get the opportunity to tell, you can sit, I can sit here in my office, and if I can decide I want to take a trip to Australia for the day, I can do that on the Internet by simply searching and learning all about Australia. There are so many book clubs and so many reader groups and all kind of writing groups all over the world. And it just amazes me how so many people just don't realize that all you have to do is type in one word in search engine and they all come up, and you can just go and have a good little Internet chat with people in other countries and gain readers and fans that way.
That's a good idea. I like that suggestion. I wrote an updated blog on the Trayvon Martin case, and I tied it into my book, L.A. Blues, because my character's name was Trayvon. And
I noticed that when I read it.
Right, and I wrote that in 2008, so I was saying when art imitates life, and just saying that, and I have an article where I say, you know, if you could use social or political issues in your writing, a lot of times your writing will have a more enduring impact, because we have a lot of issues as African Americans, as any culture here in America, and people need to have a voice and talk about it. And so bringing in the L.A. riots, that's a historical point now that yesterday was the 20th anniversary, and I noticed my sales went up. So articles are still a great way to promote. But I like what you came up with about going to the other countries. I use them for research, but I hadn't thought about that. They have book clubs. Yeah,
go to Google.com and type in book clubs or reader groups in Australia, and you'll get a list of links that come up.
Wow. Well, with your books, how did you make the bestsellers list? I know you made it a long time ago on Essence, and you were, at that time they called it self-published. Now it's almost going to be the opposite. People with New York are going to be the ones that they're going to be like, the stigma might end up being attached to that.
Right. Well, you know, I hustled. And we had a bookstore. You remember Caribou Books. Oh, how I missed them. Caribou Bookstores had a chain of African-American bookstores, and they were a big help to me. I was able to do book signings at all of their stores and sell out. And thanks to one of the owners, he would spread the word about me to other bookstores, and I would go and do signings there and would sell out. And I just hustled. I just hustled my butt. I met with book clubs, and this was in the early days, in 2000, 2001, where it wasn't a lot of self-published authors out. It was, you know, back then, self-publishing, like you said, it had a stigma. And you almost had to be a one-woman show, but appear like I had an entire staff around me. And so that's how I went to those, I targeted those bookstores that reported to the Essence bestsellers list, and I went to those stores and scheduled signings and did very well in my sales.
Oh, that's wonderful, because it was really hard back then.
Yeah.
In 2000, I know when I self-published in 1995 and 1997, my books only went among my family and coworkers at my last job. But in 2000, when I was doing it full-time, I went to these black bookstores every weekend, and they were moving quite well, and I was getting a check every 2 months. But then the bookstores started closing. And
yes.
As I got into the editing, and I became an agent in 2003, didn't get my first book deal to 2005, but, you know, it took a lot of energy. And the internet radio show, I started that in 2002, and I've been doing that consistently for 10 years. It took away from me promoting my books, so now I'm getting back to that. And and one writer, well, he's no longer, I'm not his agent anymore. He wrote, "So what are you doing working on your stuff?" Excuse me? You know, that I took from my time and put into you. I mean, because that's why I'm taking my time being selective as to who I become an agent for. When I'm your agent, I'm going to coach you, I'm going to give you ideas, I'm going to, you know, expose you to things I know about, then I use my show to push writers I'm agent for, and I pay for this show, so that's money, you know, but I figure, well, I'll get it back on the other end, but it's time now, I'm getting ready to do me, as the young people say it, so if that makes people mad, because I've promoted other people, now it's time, a lot of people didn't even know I wrote. And here I have 14 books. Some are, I have The Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sell, The Hush Hush Secrets of Making Money as a Writer, and, you know, I'm in the 5 different anthologies, and now with the short story collection and the 4 And then it was an ebook I wrote way back in 1999, how to publish and market your book as an ebook. And then, you know, it has to be updated. And I updated it off and on through the, it was an ebook, but, you know, just doing things but never having the support that we needed. And it's a shame that I just wish I had known someone who had the type of techno savvy that Steve Jobs had, or how Amazon has, you know, taken over the ebook market.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and they're, but it's really helping the writers. I'm really enjoying seeing where, I, like, one writer, I listened to his tape, he makes $30,000 a month, and then A.J. Conrad, I know he made a lot at Christmas, and a lot of the writers that I'm the agent for, they have some ebooks up, and they're making a decent check that they're seeing every couple of months, so... It's a good. It's a whole new day out there. What do you think about the changes in the publishing industry since you started?
You know what? I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful now that the playing field has leveled off, if you will, and that we're really no longer considered self-published anymore. We're independent authors, and I think that's really wonderful. I think that e-books. Has made it really easy and inexpensive, if you will, for people to independently publish. I think it's wonderful. My only issue I have is that I'm a little afraid that somewhere down the line, Maxine, we're going to get this stigma that self-published authors have had in the past of not putting out quality product.
Right.
You know, people are writing 3, 4, 5 pages and calling it a short story and selling it for $1.50, $1.99, and, you know, and people aren't having their work edited. And
it makes a difference. I'm an editor, and mm-hmm. I know how it makes a big difference. And It's really sad that people think that there's no shortcut to success. You have to kind of go through the steps, and I talk about this every week on the show. You need an editor. You don't have to come to me. There, Jessica's an editor. There are a lot of editors out there, but get someone who comes recommended. And if you see people's names consistently in books, because I've seen your name in books, Jessica.
Uh-huh.
And, my name has been in a lot of books. Even some of the people who've been to prison say they see what they. I guess I got to even. I'm working on 2 prisoners' books right now. So it's really a thing of referral. And we used to live in the information age, but now we live in the referral age. And
uh-huh.
That's what Facebook does. It kind of refers people. A lot of people are getting their jobs now through Facebook.
And, oh, absolutely. And but I just, you know, that's my only concern is that we continue to focus on putting out a high-quality product, even if it's only 5 or 6-page ebook. Get that 5 or 6-page ebook edited, not by, you know, your friends or whoever. Get someone who, I say preferably, someone who is a seasoned author. That can help you creatively to tighten up your book.
Right.
But I think it's wonderful that we all can be entrepreneurs. You know,
yeah.
Hey, I mean, you know, once you self-publish, you are an entrepreneur. Take it seriously. It's a business. Let it make it flourish. You know, just don't just stop at one book. Keep going and the talents that you've garnered to help other people.
You're right. And a lot of the writers, they publish their book, then they want to go sit down. I know that you've financed a lot of your writers.
Yes.
And what did you find was the difficulty in that?
Well, I think what I found is that it's not just with my authors, because, again, I have some great authors. They're just great people. A lot of them I've really forged friendships with. But even with other authors, specifically new authors, that they don't do their research and they don't understand that you have to hustle to get the word out. Once your book is published and once it's posted up on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, you're competing with 5 million other titles or hundreds of thousands of other titles in your genre. And you have to get out there and you have to promote your book beyond your front stoop. After your mama and daddy and sister and brothers and cousins and aunts and uncles buy your book, then who's your targeted market? You know, I notice on Facebook, I have almost 4,000 friends, and a lot of them are authors, and I see them all promoting to each other. Well, we're all on the same hustle, so you got to get outside of that box.
Right.
You know, and because, like I said, we're all on that same hustle, and we're all trying to make money selling books, and so,
right.
You know.
And authors aren't going to be your best customers sometimes.
Right. Thank you. That's what I wanted to say. Authors are not going to be your best customers. You remember Maxine back in the day, and it probably is just like you and I at the Black Writers Conference. We exchanged books.
Right.
I gave you Love and Simone. You gave me L.A. Blues. And that's how we used to do it. I guess they still do it now. You know, it was never, here's $15 for your book. Okay, and you give me $15 for mine.
Right.
No, it was let's exchange books because we all understand that we're all on the same hustle.
Right.
And we're all trying to eat. And we can't eat if we're buying everybody's books.
And we also have to know that, try to look for, as you say, readers. Because there are people who just love to read. They just eyes just light up. And I like that. So you've given me an idea for looking for readers in other countries. I have had some books sent to Paris when it was a school teacher over there that wanted my book. It's Hostage of Lies now, but it was called No Pockets in a Shroud. So I did get some overseas sales as an independent publisher. And you definitely have to just reach out and get out of your comfort zone. You have to do things a little bit different. Like when I did this blog, I said I generally don't get too political because I'm trying to pull up build an economic infrastructure for writers.
Uh-huh.
Case where I had to speak out and I had thought about it for a few weeks and, you know, I could have jumped on the bandwagon when everybody was saying it, and I'm not doing it to get on, you know, I think it's horrible. It's happened twice in my husband's family, and I say my family because of the years we were married. Two young men have been murdered, one even this year, and it happens too much. And I think as writers, we have a responsibility. I was reading Zora Neale Hurston's, someone had gone to the L.A. Times Book Festival the next day after Black Writers on Tour, and they brought it to our writers group this weekend. And just reading her life story, you know, she really didn't get famous after she died. I've always talked about it on the show, how she died and was in an unmarked grave. I think Alice Walker found her grave and put a headstone on it. But she wasn't revived to the 70s, 80s, 90s. And I think that her biggest royalty check was $900. But she lived such a rich life because she traveled all over and she was an anthropologist. And she really celebrated Black life and Black people in her writing, and her books are almost like reading a social political book, particularly since she grew up in a town that had a Black mayor at the turn of the century, which was her father. And I'm thinking it's a shame that we shouldn't have to all go out like that starving artist. With this internet, we could all make a decent living, but we've got to do our due diligence and learn the business.
Yes.
And
step outside of the pool. We all don't need to swim in the same swimming pool.
Right.
You know?
Crossover audience. If you can, try to get your book. One of the things I recommend to writers now is they even have multicultural casts in their books.
Yes.
That's what I have now in mind. Because I live in a very multicultural community here in L.A. And I was reading, I picked up a paper today for the 20th anniversary through, it's a Black paper, the Sentinel, and they were, I was thinking about how bad things were, how Blacks were just totally disregarded. At that time, Latasha Harlan had been shot. She was 15, shot in the back, and she didn't even steal the juice. And there were, you know, it was a lot of tension between the different minorities, and they were able to come over and get the liquor stores. Those were the stores targeted during that riot, too. And they could get liquor licenses. And today, like, I passed the black barbershop that's been here since I moved here 30 years ago, and it's closed. But yet the two that are run by minority, you know, from other cultures are still open, the cleaners and the liquor store. So I'm, you know, seeing where all that anger came, but it seemed like things have improved. They've tried, you know, the police have been a little more cognizant of the fact that people can have video cameras and do things. But, you know, even that is good for writers. As writers now, we can do so much on YouTube that we used to couldn't do.
Exactly. And I also think that as writers, we need to challenge ourselves and step outside of our box. You know, try writing something. Try, I don't know, making up a small town USA and just travel, do more things so that you're able to broaden your writing and write about different things. Write about different characters. I'm working on a book now that's currently untitled, and the main character is a white woman who gets lost in cornfields. I don't know where that came from, but it just came off the top of my head, and she's in and out of these cornfields doing some really crazy things. But I call myself stepping outside of my comfort zone and writing about something that I'm not familiar with, but I'm getting myself familiar, and I'm researching, and I'm learning about this little town that I'm writing about.
Good. That's what it was like for me to write L.A. Blues. The character is about 30 years younger than me, and I had to remember, you know, certain parts I could remember from when I worked and what I did. I drove around. And I went to the different projects I used to make home calls at. But at that time, you know, that was just a job. So I had to see it with the writer's eye. I had to go to a project, I think it's Jordan Downs and Watts. I went to a lot of places to try to I had to remember what happened to me during the riots. I actually went out and worked, fooled self, and could have been burnt to a crisp. Because I could hardly get off the streets. Every street I would drive up, there was fire blocking up. Because I had went on the opposite side of the riots, but when I was headed back home, I couldn't hardly get back home.
Wow.
The city was just burning. And so that memory, that's why I opened L.A. Blues with the riot. But I put it in this younger person's voice and what she was going through. And then to try to write in a younger voice. And because I've edited a lot of street fiction,
yeah,
I've picked up a lot of the slang and the words and...
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to, the only thing I could not let her like rap. You know, I like rap in a way for the poetry and the
right.
iambic pentameter, but I don't care for it. You know, I just can't see people when they get 60 going around. Like, I can still go back to Stevie Wonder's and the songs from the R&B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I Will Build You a Castle with the Towers. There's so many beautiful love songs from the, you know, that I can't imagine. Men getting older want to say, yeah, this might be, blah, blah, blah. You know, you ain't going to want to. You got to look back on that and cringe. So you want to write things that you won't be ashamed of, too, as writers when you get older. You want to kind of be proud of what you write.
You did a great job with L.A. Blues, and I, using a younger voice, I think you did a really great job.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, working with young people kind of has kept me young at heart sometimes. And my son that's 40, he'll call me and he'll even say, Mama, did you hear about this? Because I keep up with pop culture. So I'm really happy that in my second career, this is going on my 15th year in October since I left my job, that I found out, I mean, I didn't know who Nicki Minaj was or Lil Wayne, but because I'm working with... What's the name of the company? Cash Money Content, you know, as an editor. Now I know about their authors, you know, because I try to research any company I'm working with.
Right.
And Wahida Clark, her book just came out, and I had edited it back in December. And so far she's getting good reviews, been in the top 100. But she was already New York Times best-selling author, so.
I'm trying to get there.
This girl is such a talent. I told her. I mean, it's such a raw talent. It's like, wow, to work with
but
her.
But you know what?
Good.
But you know what, Maxine? Wahida hustles her butt off, too.
Oh, yes. They had a big party in New York. She was on the radio. I'm trying to get her on my show. She'll be on, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. So she does hustle. And she has her own publishing company, too. And I have a book that's coming out under one of my author's pseudonyms, Sparkle, that will be out at the end of the month. But the one thing I learned from this is that these conferences are very important. It's the same way you and I have hooked up, and now we'll be able to do business together.
Yeah.
At the conference that one of the writers went to last summer, she met Wahida. Wahida liked her. I called, and I had never been able to get through her line, but because of this writer, maybe she had given her my name. She answered, and I talked to her. I not only got her two book deals, I edited two books for her company, and then ended up she recommended me as her editor, and they researched me, and they even called Vicki Stringer to see if I was who I was, and she gave me a good recommendation. Because their thing is, well, how can you edit street fiction, and we know that you work with Carl Weber, and you know they knew I did more middle class kind of, and then they found out how many street fiction books I had worked on, and that many of them had made Essence bestsellers lists, and some had hit the New York Times, so that helped too. And so it's good when you as a writer can write in different genres. Sheila Goss, since I've been her agent, I've seen her go from just writing women's fiction to mysteries, young adult. In fact, she's got the young adult street fiction thing coming out, and she has street fiction under a pseudonym. I mean, it's just a lot of you have to challenge yourself as a writer to write outside of what you could already write. Because I always wrote historical African-American fiction, but now this is going to be part of my, I call it urban crime series, because I have book two. And I'm really, it's so much crime going on in L.A., even though they say that the crime is down. Well, almost every week somebody goes over to Dr. Milligan's store where they done lost a child or somebody's been killed. And so that lets me know that no one counts black blood. It doesn't matter if you lose a child. So it's that Trayvon's case has hit the media, but this happens all the time in our community.
Certainly does.
But let's talk about your book. I love this book. And I mean, you are the erotica queen. And yet there's a story. That's what I like. There's a story. It's, the erotica was like, oh, my goodness. So, no, she didn't. But tell us, what inspired you to write Loving Simone?
Well, Loving Simone, that character is very special to me because I don't want to put myself out there, so I'll simply say Simone reminds me of someone very close to me. And so there's a lot of me in Simone. And Simone, of course, did not have a very good relationship in her eyes with her husband. She did not, while she loved her husband dearly, but she wasn't getting that in return. And at the same time, of course, her husband, Jackson, was flaunting himself all over D.C., Maryland, with his secretaries and administrative assistants. And while he was doing all the things with other women that he would not allow his wife to do, because as far as Jackson was concerned, the wife is supposed to be submissive in the submissive position. She's not supposed to want to be a freak in the bedroom, if you will. So she reconnected with Darius, and he brought that freak out of her, and she fell madly in love with Darius. And I'm not going to tell the end of the book or the middle of the book, but let's just say that Darius blew her mind 10 times over, and there is some really good sex in that book. I really like the hot tub scene.
Yeah. What I liked about the book was this is about a woman finding her voice.
Yes.
You know, she seemed like she was just shapeless, and I had recently rewatched the movie Dreamgirls, and I hadn't been able to watch it because that was the movie my sister watched the whole 2 weeks before she passed. She just had that movie playing, but the songs are so symbolic of life and death, you know. We have One Night to Live, and then also it was the other one, We're a Family, We're Just a Giant Tree. So I didn't really want to look at it, but I kind of watched it and analyzed it, and one of the things that Beyoncé's character was saying in her song is that, you know, I'm finding who I'm going to be on my own, because he told her, you don't even have no distinct voice. I gave you, I made you, I'm everything you are. And I think that happens a lot of times with men.
Yes.
They're like a woman that's like a clay that they can shape.
Yes.
And she shouldn't, you know, and it was so old-fashioned that he thought that she shouldn't have any desire for sex and that she shouldn't have an orgasm, that only
exactly.
he needed one. I thought that was strange, the way he was running around with everybody.
That's loving Simone. You just told the story. That's loving Simone. He Jackson, she was a piece of clay. And he felt that she was supposed to be one way and one way, not have any desires, not want to experience, not even want to. She had to sneak around and please herself. And so,
you know, I laugh now because women are so different. You know, they used to didn't have all them toys and stuff. Women are so bad now, they let their husband know. They come here to get my batteries, okay?
Well, you know, I have a sex toy business, too.
Oh, you do? Women are so, I admire when I read the young, you know, the things they'll do, like masturbating from the men. Well, she didn't, so that, you know, that made me think of more my generation. But the newer generation, they're just so much more liberated.
Yeah.
To me, now they say a lot of our problems, and I heard this saying on the TV the other day that said it's ironic that the freer we became to have sex, the less we had love. And that's why I like that your story had love in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just a bunch of sexual romps in the bed, but there was a lot of love.
Oh, absolutely, because Darius loved Simone since he first laid eyes on her when he was a teenager, because Darius is good friends with Simone's brother. And so when he saw her again at the gas station, he was, number one, mesmerized by her, and number two, excited that he finally saw her again, and number three, he had it in his mind that I'm going to get her, and I'm going to hold on to her. And that's exactly what he did. And so many people, I get so many emails asking me if I'm going to do a sequel. Yes, I'm going to do a sequel. I'm working on it. But
yeah, you left it at a cliffhanger.
I do that with every book I write in case I decide to go back and do, because I tell you why I do that with, I always leave a cliffhanger now because with Sweet Revenge, Anything Goes, Sweet Revenge, and Unfinished Business, they're together. They're a set. Well, it was only supposed to be Anything Goes and then Sweet Revenge. And at the end of Sweet Revenge, I had Raven, the main character, to, you know, fall out the tub and hit her head on the toilet. Bam, she's gone. I didn't want to write about her again. I was sick of her before I got to the end of Sweet Revenge. And people don't realize we do get tired of our characters. Some of them, you know, we make them so bad to the point where we can't stand them ourselves. And so, but my readers were very upset with me that I had ended Sweet Revenge like that, that I had ended Raven, and they insisted that I bring her back. And so I had to bring her back in Unfinished Business.
Good.
And from that point on, I said, you know, I'm just going to leave the cliffhanger.
But it made me think of how we get so caught up in the characters. Remember the movie Misery, or the book, Stephen King's book? I read the book as well. And how the lady was so crazy. You killed our Misery.
Oh, she was like, yo, she's very obsessed with, I mean, you would think, she thought those characters were real. And that's a sign of an excellent author, an excellent writer, when you can make your characters appear so real that you have people talking about them day after day, long after they've read the book, like they're real people.
Well, people are now using Twitter. This is another tip. People are using Twitter to discuss characters in books.
Yeah.
They'll have a camp that believes that this one's right, that one's wrong. And this book I bought, John Locke, how he sold 1 million e-books in 5 months. He has this series, and that's how he sold it, through Twitter. He said he spent $25,000 on publicists, on press releases, on doing everything the old traditional way, and nothing happened. What made his e-book sell was Twitter. He had all these groups on Twitter discussing his characters from these series, and I think it's about 5 books he had in the series. And he was a businessman, and I like what he said in his book. If you were, he said he had had several businesses, but he said if you were to become going to real estate, you wouldn't say, oh, that's not legitimate because you are doing it yourself and not being with Century 21 or one of the big companies. So he said, why are they saying that in publishing? But I'm seeing that thing is flip-flopping as I'm reading through the different publishing newsletters I get. It is really flip-flopped, and I'm seeing it as an agent. It's really hard right now to get a book deal.
Well, as an agent, where do you see the publishing in 5 years? I'm thinking that we're going to be back to printed books. It's like we're going to go into a big circle. What do you think?
Oh, I think printed books are going to remain, just like, TV didn't knock out the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be a different format we'll be using. Who's to say? We might be using holograms to read books the same way they brought Tupac back and had it up there flash with somebody else doing a show.
Right.
You know, you just don't know what science or technology, where it's going to go. But I do believe that we're going to always have books. But e-books, and they might mellow out, but I do believe the e-books are going to be a bigger percentage of sales, because people are with their phones and the different ways they can download books.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost don't even need a computer now with the new iPhones, which I haven't gotten one. But
no, I download ebooks on my Android.
What?
And so I sit up in bed at night reading on my Android. Of course, I need glasses now.
Yeah, I better make you blind as a bat.
Yes, indeed. But one of the things I wanted to go back on is you mentioned that you published an ebook in 1999.
Right.
You know, ebooks were out then, and before then, it was just, you know, people would pay you money and you'd send them a PDF. It was locked. They couldn't do anything with it. And it just amazes me how all it took was for Amazon to come out with the Kindle, and the whole world thought that they just, you know, created ebooks all of a sudden. And ebooks have been out. You have, what's the publisher? Alora's Cave. They started out publishing ebooks.
And Book Locker was doing them a long time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's but it's once you got the technology that more people could buy the books. I used to sell my books on a CD. I would put a cover and go to conferences, put a little cover and sell my little books on that. But a lot of people still weren't that computer savvy, so that didn't do any good. But the people who are on computers, I sent them the ebook and Adobe file, and that helped. But now to see the difference, you know, I know of writers who are getting sometimes 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, and then, you know, the big names. But how the big names all made it was like the Amanda Hawkins and the J.A. Conrad. Well, J.A. Conrad was already with New York, so he had a following from that. And I've seen where some of the big name authors have turned down 500,000. And they've gone self-published because they have the platform.
Yes.
It's all about the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And the platform. Go ahead.
Just like that major author, I can't think of his name. He was with a major house.
Seth Godin, the one that's the, he writes a lot of, is it G-O-D-I-N-E? But I think he did too. He's the one who writes a lot of self-help kind of books.
But did he go with Lulu.com? One of them went with Lulu and they just, you know,
Well, a lot of them went on Amazon. You know, you can get a book deal with Amazon. A lot of them start negotiating and getting their own book deals on Amazon because they're also a publisher now.
If okay.
they buy it for the big names, they're buying books.
Uh-huh.
So it has really, it's been a big game changer, this e-books, now that it's come of age and got the technology behind it. You know, then they had the Apple where I think the iApple store, and if you put your books on Smashwords, they
uh-huh.
go
yeah.
there.
I think it's absolutely wonderful. If you want to write a book on steps and how to fly a kite, you can do that. You know what I mean? You can do that without anyone saying, no, you shouldn't do that. It's not a market for it. Or you have to change your character from African American to Caucasian because we think it's a greater market for it. You can write what you want. We're able to do what our great, 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 greats weren't able to do.
Right.
And I think it's just every time I sit down to write a book or publish my book, I think about my great grandfather, John J. Wright, who started the first African American school, Snell School, in Spotsylvania County, Virginia, and now there are many elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools named after him. And I wonder if he would really be proud of me if he was alive and to see all that I'm doing, because he was such a huge educator.
Oh, definitely. And when you're a pioneer, you'll make a way. When there's no door, you just draw you one like a cartoon. His name
mm-hmm.
is Seth Godin, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Godin. His linchpin, Are You Indispensable, that one. Now let me see who published that. Look, he has 370 reviews. It came out last April.
Was it Lulu?
But he's one who left. He had 14 international bestsellers, and he walked away from all of them.
Yeah.
I think that he was the one. Yep. And uh-huh. he writes about, you know, social issues and what's going on with, portfolio. This one was under Penguin. But after that, he started putting his books out himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was another one I remember reading about. He was a mystery writer who left. So, you know, when the big writers are even leaving and saying, this is a middleman, why should they get most of the money? A lot of people are not satisfied with their sales. I mean, with their royalties, even in the big company.
Well, but then if they're not satisfied with their royalties, whose fault is that?
Right.
You know, I mean, you...
A lot of returns now, too, on it.
Oh, yes, with borders closing. I'm not even going to talk about when borders closed. I got hit with so many returns. I thought I was going to lose my shirt.
Publishers has had that problem.
Yes, and I ended up owing the distributors for almost a year, it seemed like. For months and months and months and months. Every month I owe the distributor. So, you know, I love publishing other people and I love to help to make others' dreams come true. But so many people, they publish one book and then they want to publish other people. And I say, honey, don't do it. You need a little more experience.
Right.
Before you do that, because their Lightning Source is getting so that they're not, you know, they're getting real. I have clients who I offer self-publishing assistance and packages on TWA Solutions, and I've had clients who've told me, you know, Lightning Source is giving me a hard time because I only have one title, and they're asking now for you to have trade references and everything before you sign up with them. So they're tightening down, you know. They don't want to deal with people who are inexperienced.
You need to have more experience before you start trying to publish people. That was my intent when I went to Dr. Milligan to work in her company, and I learned everything from the bottom up, from invoices all the way up to writing back covers to formatting. I used to even format. And while I was formatting, I was doing a lot of rewriting, which is how I became a ghostwriter and a content editor. But I ended up not doing the publishing, but she always warned me. She said, I'm glad I did when I see how many returns. And I'm glad I didn't. I published, recently I published my massage therapist book, and it's The Miraculous Power of Massage by Van Womack. But he hustles. He's all over the country. He's getting ready to get back on the road. He was gone about 3 months with his book. So he hustles, and he sells pretty good out of his trunk. And then he has, I have him as e-books on Barnes & Noble's and also on Amazon. But he's, you know, really doing what a writer needs to be doing, and that's taking a book with him everywhere and talking about it and selling it. It's not the publisher's job to do it.
Mm-mm. Oh, I don't keep all copies in my purse, but I keep Loving Simone in my purse. And I'll be in the grocery store, and if it's a long line, I'll ask the lady in front of me, excuse me, do you like books? Yeah, well, let me tell you about my book. You always have to have a book with you.
Yeah.
Because everyone you see, that's a potential reader.
For sure. And reading, I think, is... it has not changed. We have Facebook. We have more distractions than we ever had. But people are reading more because we've gotten new genres. It used to be, you know, street fiction was very, very small. It was, I know we had Iceberg Slim when I was in my teens. My brothers had it, and so I knew of it through that. And Pimp and the different books. But now it's a much wider range of books, and they have them in the prisons, but the prisons aren't the only people reading the street fiction. People from other cultures are reading the street fiction. They're in Japan. They're all over because they're fascinated. And what I like about the street fiction is, if I even have an editor, she'll say, oh, goodness, this book's so boring. I like it when it's low-down and dirty. You know, it's stuff that we wouldn't do. And you kind of like, I think we like the anti-hero. The anti-hero is like the godfather, the person who goes against society norms, but yet you see the good in them, and you kind of understand why they do like they do. And they're likable. They generally have something that's good in them that's redeeming, and that's what I always tell the writers. Don't just show all the negative. Show some redeeming qualities that make the character, the reader get engaged with the character. I kind of like, in fact, there's this character in Wahida's last book called Dark. And I said, he's wormy. Can you bring him back? Because you don't know if he died at the end. But he's such a fascinating. He's just so low down and dirty. I mean, he's just cold-hearted. Oh, my goodness. But he was fascinating. He stays with you. He was a character who would stay on your mind. That's probably why the character you wanted to kill off, everybody loves. People love the villains. Because they'll do stuff that we wouldn't do as trying to be nice people.
And that's why I like writing villains, because I have them do things that I always wanted to do, but I don't have the guts to do.
Yep, I like the bank robbers. I like that. And so that's why I'm kind of liking this crime fiction. Her brother, what's the name's brother in book two, you find out a little bit more about him. I mean, I'd start finding out more about him when she was looking for him in book two. But he's just very amoral, does what he sets his own rules. He's an entrepreneur, but he's an entrepreneur on the other side of the law. But then, like he told his sons, when his son said, he said, I want y'all to go to college and work on Wall Street or something. But it came out, the son told the aunt, he said, but really, my dad said that's really gangster to be on Wall Street. I mean, you look, it just went down. Now, what is more gangster than that? You go shipwreck a whole worldwide economy.
Exactly.
And this other company that they just had on, Letterman, that was the main one. I haven't heard anything about anybody going to jail. Now, that's some real gangster stuff there when you can commit crime and get away with it.
Yes, indeedy.
We have seen it, you know, and that's why I always analyze the criminals and say, you know, sometimes they're just doing what a lot of people that are, you know, have that facade of being good people. We have a lot of crooked people up in high places.
Yeah, exactly. Of course we do. We certainly do. I'm living right here in Washington.
Oh, yeah, you know. I mean, and we just had to scandal where the Secret Service. I say, my goodness,
my
is there
word.
Any? I mean, do people know? I mean, down is you supposed to be on public business, and you down there with prostitutes?
Well, you know what? That's not the listen. I'm sure that's not the first time.
No,
that happened.
It just got busted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's really something. But Jessica, we're coming up near the top of the hour. I want you to give out your books again and your websites and also where your books are available.
Okay. Well, my books are Anything Goes in My Sister's Corner. Sweet Revenge, Apple Tree, Unfinished Business, Fatal Desire, Erogenous Zone, Crossing Sisters, and Loving Simone. My website is www.jessicatillis.com. You can also find me at www.expressyourselfpublishing.com. That's expressyourselfpublishing.com. And if you need an editor, a book cover designer, an interior designer, a graphic designer, a web designer, an editor, a writer, a ghostwriter, or anything you need, self-publishing, book coaching, I do it all at TWASolutions.com. It's formerly the writer's assistant, but now it's TWASolutions.com. And all of my titles are available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and wherever other bookstores where books are sold. And Loving Simone, if you are a member of Black Expressions Book Club, please, please, please swipe a copy from Black Expressions. The hard copy is only $5.99. And when I checked yesterday, Loving Simone was number 29 on Black Expressions' top 100 bestsellers. So please help me get my book up to number one. It's only $5.99. You can't get a hardcover anywhere for $5.99. It costs me more than $5.99 to print a hardcover book. So that's an excellent price, and you will not be disappointed.
Oh, yes, I love Loving Simone. It's a really raw and yet it's sophisticated. And it's, I think it's clean because, you know, I've worked with some, now you're talking about some raw stuff, some of these young writers, right? It's still clean. It's very, let me see, I'm trying to find the word. You know, you still do it in a sophisticated way.
Right. Yeah.
You're not just using all these four-letter words.
No.
You use the actual technical terms. And I've had to just learn to not look at what the writer, I look at the story, and I like that your erotica does not overshadow the story, that the sex was just a part of her life, but there was other things going on, other issues, it was psychological issues, and then the thing she was going through with her marriage, and a lot of people who
and
haven't been
father.
Married.
Yeah.
And her father, a lot of people who haven't been married, they have this, you know, I know so many young single women, I just want to get married. They have this pie in the sky dream of what marriage is. Hey, have you been married before, Jessica?
Twice.
Yeah, so it was very realistic. I said, oh, my, somebody finally tell her the truth.
It's a lot of hard work. I've been divorced now for, 7, 8 years, and I've never been more at peace with myself.
Yeah, that's how I feel, too. Yeah, but it's great. But you can tell that there's experience here. You know, I can tell when it's somebody 20, love is just the all and the be all, the end all, and it's the way you love in your 20s. I mean, with your whole, you're going there blind, your whole heart, soul. And I like that you kind of lose that innocence, too. But your character still has that innocence in her, and I like that, too.
Yes, but at my age, at going on 46, it's not about love. I want to know, can you come cut my grass, clean out my pool? Can you come and clean out my gutters? That's
now everybody, but the men are looking for, what are you bringing to the table? It's something. Relationships have changed because of women being so independent now, and it's a good thing and a bad thing.
It is, yeah. It can. We're very independent, and it can be a hindrance too.
Right, because men have not, they have not progressed to that point of liking the fact of women making more money than them, and they haven't gotten to that point yet. So it's I think that's why the divorce rate is so high. Divorce rate was low when everybody had to share a coat together. If you put your arm in one sleeve, he had to put it in the other.
Uh-huh.
And you had one car and one TV, but now everybody has their own thing, and it go almost too much. So it's really, it takes work to keep a relationship together now.
It does.
But thanks again, Jessica, for coming on the show. And when your new book comes out, when do you think your new book could be dropping?
Oh, I don't know, Maxine. Maybe at the end of the year.
Okay, well, definitely come back on the show. I'm so glad we reconnected.
Well, thank you. I am too.
Yes, and I wish you all the best, and congratulations on Loving Simone. It is good. I'll be getting my review on in the next week or two.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, did you finish L.A. Blues?
I am on the last chapter. I can only read when I get in bed because I'm always working during the day. So I read when I get in bed. So I'm on the last chapter.
Oh, good. Well,
and I will let you know what I think of it when I'm done. I'll do a review as well.
Okay, well, thank you. See, that's what we have to do, writers. We have to exchange reviews. I keep seeing little remarks on Facebook. Oh, I read the book and I'm waiting on the book too, but where's the reviews? And you know, start reviewing the writers. And because this is, I was saying, we're not in the information age, we're in the recommendation age. People look for recommendations from other people. And I always look, I'll say, well, did you do this work? And the guy just said, do my work on my house. He was recommended from my daughter. And he did her friend's house. It was her ex-husband. So you really want to know people before you work with them now. And this is how, if you put a good review up as a reader for a writer, or even if it's a critical one, but put something up. And then sometimes people even buy the book with a bad review because they'll say, well, somebody said it was good. You know, some people love it and some people hate it, and that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
That can draw readers, and we need more reviews. So if I was to say anything to readers and to writers, put up more reviews. Don't just read a book. Now we have a place where on Amazon and Barnes & Noble where you could put reviews, and even the Goodreads and what's that other place? The library.net or something where you could put
and
reviews.
And Safari and all of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Safari. We got to start doing that. But thanks again, Jessica. I knew this would be an interesting conversation with somebody that's been in the business.
Thank you, Maxine.
Oh, you're welcome, and continued success.
And same to you.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
All right. Please return next week to the Dr. Thompson Show. See you next week. Love you all.